What do you think?
I think we're dead meat. Real dead meat.
You're dead meat! Go ahead and laugh, you guys. If I ever find a little passes of business, you're dead meat.
Welcome to the Dead Meat Podcast. This is an extension of my horror channel on YouTube, Dead Meat. I'm James A. Janice.
And I'm Chelsea Rebecca, and we're a boyfriend and girlfriend who like to get scared.
Yeah, and today we're going to be talking about Phantasm.
Oh boy.
So Phantasm, if you're not aware, is a film that came out in 1979, early. And it was done pretty much entirely by one dude,
no.
Don Coscarelli. What? Yeah. This guy,
actually, no, it's impressive that this was done by one dude.
It always
is. I take
is,
that back.
Especially when, yeah, when it's not a mess. This is, I wouldn't call it a mess.
It's not a mess.
It's not a mess. It's unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was made with love, I
For
think.
For sure. Now, this guy, Don Coscarelli, he did it all, literally. He wrote, he directed, he shot it, he produced it, he edited it. Edited it like his own movies.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man.
That's
so
cool.
Rare for a director to do that. I know Ty West has done that as a more contemporary example.
Mm-hmm.
As an editor, I mean, both of us have a background in editing. That's always impressive.
It
means you really love it if you're going to direct it and then sit there and edit it too.
Yep.
This is a surreal fucking movie.
Yes, it is. It's weird because this movie, I had only ever seen the bits that take place in the mausoleum.
Okay.
So in my head, that's what this movie looks like. But when you go outside of the mausoleum, it's a totally different movie and a very different vibe. And I was into it.
Yeah, this is a movie that I definitely watched younger when I had my like horror movie website or whatever. And I remember feeling a special fondness for it. Because I think I recognized even back then that this was a movie that, did we say in Wishmaster, the B tier of movies, second tier horror movies? This is definitely one of those. Like, you don't know Phantasm unless, like, you're digging deep into horror.
Yeah.
You're not just a casual acquaintance with
you
horror.
You have to be kind of a nerd, I think. This one I'd heard of because, so I mentioned in our first episode that I didn't really grow up watching horror and I couldn't watch them as a kid when I was younger because I couldn't watch violent movies growing up. So there was this program on Bravo, I think in the early 2000s, that they did the 100 Scariest Movie Moments.
That's right.
And I realized watching this movie that I recognized Phantasm because Phantasm shows up in that list. So there were scenes of this I'd seen and was very familiar with because I would watch that 100 Scariest Movie Moments whenever it was on. Because it was such a morbid curiosity for me.
Yeah, so I guess we can just get into it.
My notes are crazy, by the way. I'm looking at just things out of context are awesome.
Yeah, I hope we can do this justice.
I know.
I bought the Phantasm Blu-ray collection, which is a real nice Blu-ray collection. It's one of the nicest sets that I own. It's all five movies, beautiful packaging. Phantasm's kind of nice because like this, there's probably not going to be any more. This is like a completed set because Angus Scrimm, who plays the tall man, the villain, passed away shortly after the fifth one. I don't think they would make more without him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be weird. So hopefully this is it and I don't have to buy any more Blu-rays because this is a very nice collection. But the movie, we put it in and it starts with an introduction by Angus Scrimm.
Oh, that was so fun.
Yeah, he just sits there and in a single unbroken, unedited take, just talks to the camera about how he came to play the tall man. And it was like, oh, cool. You seem like a nice guy.
Yeah. It was nice to watch someone talk about that movie and seem like they really cared about it.
Yeah.
And it seems like it was really special to him.
The feeling I have is that the production of this was a very communal family thing. And I think that continued on throughout the series as it's kind of like how the Child's Play series has this kind of family vibe to it.
Yeah.
It's very close knit, the crew and cast on it. I think this is probably even more so because it's so much more lower budget, independent.
That really seems to often be the case with horror because so when I first started working on movies, I started working in art departments. I was an intern in a couple art departments, and I worked with a lot of people who had done horror before.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, that horror feels different. And they think that just because the material tends to be so dark, that the environment on set tends to be the opposite, just to kind of bring a balance. And they've always said that horror is the most fun to work on and is always the most chill atmosphere. So,
hell yeah.
Yep.
So after the very simple title card with some serif font, we get immediate graveyard sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird
It
sex.
Is the worst
it's
sex
not
I've
fun
ever
sex.
Seen.
They're not moving.
They're just laying there making the worst noises ever.
Man.
Just the most lethargic noises.
This is when you know it's an amateur director.
Yeah.
Knowing he's like, I gotta do this sex scene.
Yeah.
Let's just film it.
There's a close-up of boobs right away.
Yes, there is.
Pretty sure it's a boob double. From the actress playing, because you don't see the face in the same shot.
Oh, you don't ever?
I don't think so. I think it's a boob double.
Okay.
But the booby lady then takes out a knife and kills this man.
Yep.
Yeah. And then the boob lady turns into the tall man.
Yeah.
That guy was fucking the tall man, dude.
Which that at least explained away why the sex was so weird. Because they're not even they're
but no because it was the guy who was weird. It wasn't even the chick
true.
Who was weird,
but
it
neither
was the
them
guy
were
having
moving
sex.
She's it's weird, she's sitting on top of him but her legs are backwards, so she's almost sitting like a seal.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
A little bit.
And he's just laying there not moving and going
And this guy's name is Tommy
Tommy.
You just did not have good sex. And I guess apparently somehow the conclusion drawn around his death is that he killed himself. And so at his funeral, his two friends, Reggie and Jody, are meeting up. Reggie is this bald guy with a ponytail.
He's the ice cream man,
He's
right?
the ice cream man, but not the titular
not the
ice, cream,
ice
man,
cream man
played by Clint Howard in Ice Cream Man. And these two are like, oh yeah, Tommy was part of our trio. We were a trio of guys. Sucks that he's dead, dude. His funeral's at this mausoleum, this funeral home, which looks fucking awesome, dude.
Yeah.
I really like the look of this movie. It does a lot of things with shadows and shapes, and it looks like a German is it expressionist? Expressionalism?
Expressionism, yeah.
Yeah.
So stuff from the 30s.
Dr. Caligari.
Even 20s,
is like the prototypical.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with that era of filmmaking, it's some of my favorites because it's so fucking crazy looking.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, Metropolis. Really, really cool stuff. If you think silent film is boring, that stuff is definitely not. It's really neat.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I feel like this movie really evokes that imagery. Then we see this kid riding his fucking dirt bike over these
graves. Oh my god. It's so we have this funeral cut to this 13 or so year old just shredding up this graveyard in a motorcycle.
And what does he see running around these gravestones? These little Jawa looking motherfuckers.
I kept forgetting those were even in the movie.
Oh yeah,
until
you can't
they
forget
showed
about the
back
Jawas.
Up.
Yeah, yeah, because you don't get a great view of them here.
No,
but later
weird.
On you see them, and they're just fucking Jawas.
They're just Jawas.
And this came out 2 years after Star Wars.
Oh no, did it really?
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, it's a cheap way to make those creatures. Just a hood.
Yeah,
and you can't really see under.
Yeah,
them.
But they're definitely Jawas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tall man has a line. He like screams at the older brother Jody.
Is that when he goes, boy? Or is that later?
That's later. This time he's just like,
the funeral is about to begin, sir.
I am sorry for your loss. Pat.
And we see that this kid whose name is Michael. Yeah, I always want to call the kid Jody for some reason. Jody just seems more like a kid name. And,
yeah.
But no, Jody's the older brother. Michael is his younger brother. And we see him spying on this funeral with binoculars. And later on, you just find out that he just won't leave his older brother, Jody, alone.
Yeah, he's Jody's younger brother. I think Jody says something about not wanting his younger brother to come because it would be too traumatic because their parents had just died.
Their parents have just died, so like his older brother Jody is all that Michael has now.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Jody's kind of getting a little sick of it because there's that scene with like this dude is in, his name's Toby, he's dressed like a fucking tennis bro, and he just walks up to him, and is during like a flashback, and Michael's like under the car, and Jody's talking to Toby, and is like, yeah, I think I'm gonna send him to live with his aunt. But in the now, Michael spots through the binoculars, the tall man lift up a casket.
Oh man, he lifts up the coffin by himself.
Yeah, by himself, and puts it in the back of his car. And you freaked out when that happened. And were you worried that it was going to be something that like they didn't address?
No, it just caught me off guard.
I think as a kid, I didn't fully realize that that's like
so heavy,
not a thing that you.
Yeah,
can
you
do.
Can't just do that. They don't have four people carry a coffin at a funeral for fun.
They do specifically have that shot beforehand of the pallbearers carrying it. And Jody references later. He's like, well, that's impossible. I was one of four guys carrying it. So
yeah,
I guess little me just didn't pay attention. And then I think after this is when we get the first iteration of the theme song.
That's the one that I kept thinking sounded like the beginning of Bring Me to Life by Evanescence.
Oh, I don't know that song.
I'll edit in part of it.
Okay.
So you guys can hear that they sound the same to me.
They use this theme a lot, but I kind of love it. It's kind of like the Halloween theme. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But it's got more synths and shit going on in it. And I described this even before we watched it. I was like, I feel like Phantasm is the prog rock of horror movies. And after watching it, I think that's accurate.
I mean, there's a scene where they're running around in the graveyard. A lot of this takes place in that graveyard, but it's nighttime. They're running around that graveyard. And there's some funky, like, Main Street Electrical Parade music.
Yeah.
And it's a scary scene. It's not fun. Like, but they have this crazy, it's prog rock.
It's super proggy synths and shit. And I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great. Michael leaves this place and goes to a psychic. And it's an old blind woman and her granddaughter, I assume.
Yeah. So Michael knocks on the door of this house and this younger girl opens. What is she? She's like, my grandma is waiting for you.
Yeah.
And so Michael goes inside and sits down at this table that I'm assuming is usually used for tarot readings. It's like a psychic's office. I don't know what else to call it.
The psychic office.
The psychic's office. And this grandma. I'm sad that was the only part she was in. She was kind of atmospheric, I think.
Yeah, I always like when they have blind characters and then a person in the scene will try to talk to the other person and be like, tell her this. And then it's like, she can hear you.
She can hear you.
I always love that.
Michael.
Michael.
No wonder Jody wants to leave.
Yeah, you fucking idiot.
Fucking idiot.
So we get a bunch of flashbacks as he's apparently telling this this older woman and her granddaughter, who have like an air of familiarity with Michael. This is not
the
first time.
It seems like he shows up there all the time.
Yeah.
Which makes me uncomfortable. I think he's one of those people who is very susceptible to psychic suggestion and will pay you thousands of dollars if you say you're a psychic and there's demons after him.
Yeah.
And you need $1,000 to exorcise him.
Oh yeah, he would do it if he had the money.
Absolutely.
He in the flashbacks we see him driving this car.
Yeah.
Like, how old's this kid?
Yeah.
He looks I think we get an age.
He's 13. Say he's
Yeah. And, you know, as a 13-year-old, I was probably that age when I watched this. I remember feeling that Michael was very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's running around town. He's riding his bike. He's hopping fences. He's
spying on everyone.
I did a little bit of spying. I had a little binocular bag. I do love the shot when he, like, it's after that tennis bro scene And Jody's like driving off somewhere, and Michael just like follows him on foot. And there's a long shot of him just like running down the side of the street, hopping over fences. And like, that's a cool shot. That actor, that kid had to do that.
Yeah.
I believe that actor is a Michael Baldwin, no relation to the Baldwins.
He's not a Baldwin.
He's not a, I mean, he's a Baldwin, but he's not
he's
a Baldwin.
He's not a Baldwin.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just remember thinking like, that's cool. That kid is fucking running down that street, hopping those fences. I felt a lot of kinship with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You hang out with psychic grandmas?
I didn't know any in town, and I'd probably think it was bullshit, but that's okay. He can, that can
but
be
she's
his
not
thing.
Bullshit. She's real, as far as we know.
As far as we know, because it's after, well, what does she tell him?
She, okay, so what happens is he sits down, and the grandma gets out this box, and
oh,
her
yeah.
granddaughter says she wants you to put your hand inside.
Mm-hmm.
Michael's skeptical.
This, I would be too. The box looks like a giant pencil sharpener. It looks like he's gonna stick his hand in and bring it out. And it's gonna be sharpened.
So he puts his hand inside and he immediately feels pain and he says it hurts. Then the grandma, through the granddaughter, is telling him that fear is only in the mind.
Yeah, this box is basically the cave on Dagobah. Yeah, what's in there? Only what you take with you.
Yeah.
And he brought his fear. And then when he chills the fuck out, it stops hurting.
Yeah, so what is that box? We don't see it ever again.
I don't know what that box is.
It's
weird. And then he leaves and the grandma just laughs.
Yes!
Like, laughs maniacally.
I love her.
And then her granddaughter kind of looks a little like concerned.
Grandma.
What a great, it's a fun scene.
That's how I want to be.
But that's all we get from them.
I want to be appointment only grandma and I don't talk. I have someone else to do that for me. And I just wear black.
She probably catch a snooze. She had sunglasses on.
Yeah.
After that is a fucking great scene because Reggie the ice cream man rolls up to the house. And I'm sorry. This guy's an ice cream man and he looks like the ice cream man in the movie Ice Cream Man. He looks like Clint Howard just with a longer, he just has a ponytail, whereas Clint Howard is just bald. I just don't understand how there are these two guys in these horror movies that look the same and are both Ice Cream Man.
Which one came out first?
This one by far.
Okay.
Ice Cream Man was a 90s movie.
Holy shit, was it really?
It's like a mid-90s, I think, like low-budget slasher. It's interesting. But
okay.
It just is weird. But also, apparently, the actor, Reggie Bannister, is a musician. So he hops out and he sits on the porch with Jody, the older brother, and they just fucking jam out, dude.
They just jam for a while.
Yeah.
It's maybe a little bit too long.
No, it could have gone on twice as long, and I would have been fine with it.
I'm just a-sitting here at midnight. And I've been sitting here till noon. You see, my lady left me lonely. Yes, she did. Baby left me blue.
They're because pretty good.
They're really good. Hell yeah. And they're drinking Dos Equis.
Yeah.
I like Dos Equis.
I love Dos Equis.
Yeah. Like this is a great scene.
Yeah.
Because it's just, and at first I was like, is this them actually playing? Yeah, dude. That guy, Reggie Bannister, composed that. He composed that duet and they're just like jamming out to it.
That's fun.
So that's a lot of fun. Also, I guess as good time as any, just to mention, the sound design in this movie is great. There's always stuff going on, a lot of whirring noises and vibratory sounds and like cymbal rolls. And especially on our Blu-ray that we have, sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds so good. And very happy with the sound design of this movie.
Oh, it was right around this time in my notes that I said acting is good for low budget.
Well,
but for low budget, yeah.
For low budget. And for most of them.
Sure.
It's older brother Jody.
He has a hard time.
He struggles.
He does.
You know what? I'm not going to look up the actor's name. I'm not going to call him out like that. I think these movies are pretty much the only things he was in. I think these movies are the only things that most of these people were in.
Yeah.
Besides Reggie Bannister's cameo in Wishmaster. Oh, God, does every movie we cover have to have Reggie Bannister in it now? or Angus Scrimm, since he narrated that. Reggie's fine. The younger brother's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's part of that Baldwin.
I think it's weird. I thought Jody was fine at the beginning. Maybe he has a harder time with the more abstract shit once it's getting, you know, to the second half of the movie. And I imagine a lot of it's just reacting to not anything that's there in the moment.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right now, Jody goes to the bar and he gets picked up by that tall man.
Where is this bar, by the way? Because it looks like, to me, so it's always the same establishing shot of this bar, which is basically a cardboard box. It's it is like a shed made of old wood, and it looks to me like it's in an industrial park. I don't know where this is supposed to be at.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm wondering, since I know a lot of this was shot in LA, some of it right outside of San Francisco, did they fucking drive somewhere where they figured they could get away with maybe building this weird ramshackle set? It's so bizarre. I like it, though.
He goes there and he gets picked up by the tall man lady. And I guess when she's like, hey, let's go fuck at a cemetery, he's like, okay. Because they go to Morningside is the name of the cemetery. They go to Morningside.
Like, I'm just now thinking about this. If your friend just died, and for all you know, your friend is buried in that cemetery, would you go fuck someone there?
No.
It's weird.
I mean, I think in most cases, you wouldn't go fuck someone in a cemetery.
Yeah, that's weird.
I guess it depends on how long it's been.
I don't know. I just think, like, if I was buried in a cemetery, I would want it to be a multi-purpose cemetery.
You would want people to fuck on top of you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, or, you know, that's ride nice, their baby. Motorcycles.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm dead. I don't care.
Sure. Yeah, fuck it, dude. That's
like
land.
Synespia. So in LA, where we live, we have Synespia, where there are these movie screenings in the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. And sometimes I tell people about that and they think it's really weird.
Yeah.
But I like it.
I
like
think
the,
we're sitting. I don't think
we're not
sitting
on graves. It's an open lawn area next to the mausoleum. They do project the films on the back of the mausoleum, which
yeah,
maybe
that's a mausoleum.
Maybe some people could, you know, think is strange. But I like it. I like the idea of repurposing graveyards to be something fun and social.
Yeah.
You know?
It's fun.
That's what I would want.
And of course, fucking creepy little brother Michael has made his way to this fuck sesh.
This
and
scene,
he's watching through binoculars as his brother goes to town on this lady.
You're 13. You know what is happening.
Oh, you definitely know. I think he's into seeing the lady's titties.
Yeah, but
we don't see them here.
Cost?
And apparently at the cost of seeing your brother's man ass, because that's what we do
see. Looked away and missed it.
Oh, you missed
it?
Because
I remember you like shouted.
You always got a shout with a man ass.
By the way, I wrote that Michael reminds me of Denny from The Room, especially in this part.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're
I'm
both
surprised
kind
they didn't
of
go like tackle them.
Ambiguously aged floppy haired boys.
Well, Michael gets flushed out by some Jawas who start chasing him, and that's when Jody pops up with panties in his mouth. He's got the pair of panties and he's holding them by his teeth. A move that has never happened organically ever in real life. It is a staple of sex comedies. It is something
out of Animal
House. That's
where he learned it, dude.
Yeah. And Jody finds Michael and is talking to him about the chick who he just left naked by a tombstone.
One, you just took my panties off with your teeth. Weird. Two, little brother runs by. Three, you say, oh shit, that's my kid brother, and then run away.
And he's gone for like 15, 20 minutes talking to
home.
His little brother.
Yeah.
And then he gives Michael the keys, and he comes back, and the girl's gone. And obviously she's gone, Jody.
Yeah, even though, you know, it's the tall man.
Yeah, but from
the
his perspective.
Even the tall man is like, dude.
It's not worth it.
Yeah, no. You gotta try harder. Too sad.
Do you think the tall man gets off when he's also... What the fuck? Why can't he be a lady?
He's an alien.
Oh, he is an alien.
I figure the tall man, is just another form of his.
It's a cool form.
Yeah.
I would be tall man too.
Yeah. I figure his species is just kind of genderless.
Do you think they get sexual pleasure?
Probably, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good break for the tall man.
Good for you, tall man. Tall man is gender fluid. It's canon.
It is canon. Michael has a nightmare that night, the one where he's like in bed and the tall man's behind his bed, just kind of leaning over, and there were like Jawas on the side of him. I wasn't sure if it was real or not. It wasn't. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, the tall man's scary, by the way.
Yeah, you think so?
He's a creepy. Yeah, he reminds me of a Twin Peaks character. He's something that I feel like came straight out of David Lynch's head, but is pre-David Lynch. I mean, not pre-David Lynch. He would have, what, had Eraserhead by this point?
Eraserhead was, I believe, 78. So I think he had just had
Eraserhead. He just did Eraserhead?
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's a scene where I keep wanting to call him Denny. His name's not Denny.
Michael.
There's a scene where Michael sees the tall man across the street, and there's this great shot of the tall man walking by this ice cream store, and for some reason there's like rolling fog
coming out the ice cream truck,
making its way. Oh, is that it? It's like,
yeah, it's Reggie,
it's
like
dry
unloading.
Ice kinda.
Yeah, it's dry ice.
Okay, so it's fog rolling across the screen, and the tall man just kind of stops and looks at Michael, and it reminded me of Twin Peaks. It's so creepy.
It's a great shot. He just kind of like,
it's
huffs
really
all this
cool
vapor and just like,
oh yeah, he stands there and is like, in the dry ice.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's pretty so great. Cool. Also, Dune's Cantina. That's the name.
Dune's
of the bar,
Cantina.
Of that wooden fucking shack.
That sounds
standing in the middle
filthy
of nowhere. Yeah.
There's cigarette butts all over that place.
Oh yeah. That place.
Peanut shells on the floor.
Its floor is just cigarette butts and peanut shells. Michael's working on the car in the garage, and it fucking falls on him.
Yeah.
Just fucking, this car falls on him, which
he
seems like a nightmare.
He hears
to
someone
me
in the garage.
He hears tribal drums. There's like a long extended like drum sequence on the soundtrack, which I'm down with. He's like, I heard some weird shit. I was like, dude, you were just listening to some world music. Michael sneaks out that night and heads back to the mausoleum because he's sure that there's some weird shit going on. And this is the first of two times that this happens where there's like this long stretch of silence that's broken super suddenly by him, in this case, kicking out the window. It's just like this long, there's music, it's silent, it's like long tracking shots of him like being sneaky, and then he just fucking boots out this window and it
of
shatters.
The mausoleum?
Yeah, it's like a basement window.
I like too, just speaking of the mausoleum and the graveyard in general, I love that the shot of the house in the graveyard is always at the same angle.
Yeah.
It's really creepy.
Yeah.
There's something.
What, the building? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The giant, like, funeral home.
Funeral home, sure.
It's, one, it's just a gorgeous building.
It's a cool building.
But it's always shot at this kind of three-quarter angle from the front, and it's always the exact same, even
it's
though
like
the
low angle.
Yeah, the time of day changes, but I think it being the same shot over and over and over again is really cool.
Yeah.
It's effective. I liked it.
Yeah, I love it. The building looks like a Monticello, or like a building that an early president would have retired
like colonial.
To, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. And the inside is cool. It's got this like weird zebra print marble kind of going on.
Oh, of the mausoleum?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering if that was just a set that they built. It has to be.
I guess.
Because it's so fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because that's where they really get into like the lighting and the shapes and the sharp angles.
Those scenes are the ones where if you know anything about Phantasm or you're just barely familiar with it, I think that's the setting that you think of.
Definitely.
Is those mausoleums. So it's all like the grays and reds, and it's that atmosphere is really surreal. You have these Greek heads on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
They're like Greek. I think there's some busts, but they're almost like reliefs that are up on the wall. And I think that aesthetic's so cool. It's really 70s.
Yeah.
I like it.
And
it's very European art cinema, I think.
And that setting might be what you think of if you know Phantasm, but we're about to get what is probably the most infamous part of the series.
And the part I had seen.
Yeah.
And
this
I
is the
immediately
part that if
recognized.
You've seen anything,
yeah.
You've seen this. Because Michael hides in a coffin when he hears some people coming. It turns out to be this this fucking like handyman with this weird straw hat.
Oh, this guy's creepy too.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. He's only in this one scene because after he grabs Michael and tries to like hold him down or whatever, this metal sphere starts flying through the air. And
it's, I guess to describe it, it's a sphere that's probably bigger. It's bigger than a fist.
Yeah.
And
it's just a metal
like
sphere,
like softball size.
Yeah.
And then it Yeah, it kind of opens up a little and like
little hooks come out.
Yeah.
Because like it chases Swiss Michael through Army the hallways. Knife. The handyman grabs Michael. And then, yeah, these two little like prongs come out of the front of the sphere.
Yeah, as it's speeding towards them in air.
And Michael gets out of the way just in time. So the sphere slams into this handyman's forehead with the prongs. And then it extends a little like drill thing.
Yeah,
into
the
guy's forehead. And just fucking blood, like a fire hose.
Yeah,
comes out of him.
Blood starts shooting out of the back of the sphere. So it's weird. The sphere's drilling into his head, and then blood is going into the sphere and then shooting out the back.
Yeah,
like
it's like
a hose.
Draining his head of blood.
It's gross.
It's pretty awesome. The blood looks like paint.
Whatever. I love it. It reminds me of I think a lot of older color zombie movies have the kind of orange red blood
is that,
very
like, bright
paint-like.
Red. Oh, we also get that blood when Michael friggin' bites into his arm to get rid of him.
Ew, yeah.
And I just love seeing that like that ruthlessness of Michael and that determination. Mm-hmm. Also, the guy pees himself after he dies.
I like that touch. It just makes it more primal.
So there's like a little chase sequence with some more cool sound effects going on, a lot of crashes and shit. He ends up cutting off the tall man's fingers that get trapped in the door, and he sees this yellow blood.
Yeah.
Super bright yellow blood.
So the tall man bleeds yellow, bright yellow. It's opaque yellow. It's not see-through.
So that ain't right.
It just looks like yellow paint.
Yeah. And so another cool thing about Michael is he's smart enough to grab some of them fingers, put them in a box.
Yeah.
Or maybe just one, but he grabs it, and he gets out of there right before Jawa gets him. And he like,
oh my God, he takes this box with a finger in it and the finger's moving around in it. And there's yellow blood in there too. And he gives it to Jody.
But don't forget how Jody finds him. Jody wakes up the next morning and Michael is sitting on the steps asleep with this box with a fucking loaded shotgun in his lap. Because he's like, I like that. And this is another thing where it's like, okay, this kid, like, he's smart because it's like, oh, my brother will have to wake me up if I'm in his way on the stairs when he
wakes
up.
He's inside on the steps, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so he's like, I will be in his way, so he has to wake me up, so we have to deal with this.
And their house is very 70s. It's all wood paneling, and the stairs have these little poles.
Yeah.
And I thought this was so funny. It has these poles going up the one side. So if the right side of the stairs is the wall, the left side is these poles every step. And there's a few times where they get in a little scuffle on the stairs, and each time they knock out one of the poles of the stairs, and
yeah,
they just
like
keep knocking
them
out.
Them
it's
missing.
So funny.
Yeah. But this scene, they don't get into a scuffle because Michael gives him the box and Jody opens it.
Also a good line reading.
Okay, I believe you. Jesus.
Yeah.
Dude, it's a finger in a box.
Yeah.
Even just a normal human finger in a box that's not moving.
It's like, yeah, this kid's been through some shit at least. But just that delivery. Okay, I believe you.
Okay, I believe you.
And then they think for like 2 seconds about it, and they're like, I can't figure this thing out.
Oh, man.
There's a crazy fly, that crazy fly thing.
The
it looks
finger
awful.
Yeah, it's weird. So the finger turns into a fly.
Is that what happens?
Yeah, because Michael brings it upstairs and then he realizes that the finger's not moving anymore. So then he opens the box and this bug flies out.
Yeah, it's a nasty bug.
And
it's clearly a plastic bug. But these guys sell it. Uh-huh. And they're like flying all over
it's
the room.
It's good physical acting.
It's great. They're
and
doing
then
a good job there.
The ice cream man shows up again.
Yeah.
And
hey, what's going on here?
First of all, my favorite thing that he does in this scene is ask if they want, and he says specifically if they want to go on a ride along in the ice cream truck. And I love the idea of going on an ice cream man ride along, like you go on a fucking police ride along.
Yeah.
What goes on your route?
I had friends who drove an ice cream truck in high school, and I went on some ice cream truck ride.
My friend's older brother was an ice cream man. For sure, some crazy shit went down.
Yeah, I just love how he's like, school's about to get out. It's about to be hot and bumping. Let's go hit up the streets.
Oh, man.
We get some gun safety tips that I think are accurate. He's like,
That sounded.
You don't aim without shooting, and you don't shoot without intending to kill.
Yeah. they keep referring to the tall man as that mother.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so funny. The scene leading up to this before they decide to go back to the mausoleum, they're like, we got to get that mother.
Yeah.
And I love it.
So Jody goes to the mausoleum and immediately disregards all of the gun safety tips he just said, because a Jawa jumps on his back and he lifts the gun over his head, points it backwards.
This shouldn't be possible.
No.
I don't think.
And he shoots the Jawa off of his back over his head. Like, he shoots over his head.
His wrist is even kind of bent.
I can't even
at
do
an
it
angle.
Right now.
The knockback, you wouldn't be able to do that, I don't think. It's crazy. You would blow your head off.
Yeah, he would definitely
nuts.
Blow his head off, but it works.
Yeah.
And then he there's a car charging at him, and he just shoots at the fucking car. And then Michael picks him up in the car, and this hearse is chasing them, and he's like, nobody's driving it, which is like a creepy thing,
yeah.
But we don't really see it.
No.
They just say
that no one's driving the car.
Yeah, and
I mean,
which is a creepy thing, and I understand how they couldn't really do it with their budget.
Yeah,
but it seems real cheap to be like, nobody's driving that car,
and then
like,
not show it.
Yeah, I think they tried to show it, but like, it's the shots are so dark that it's not really effective.
Yeah,
but that's okay. That's okay. That's fine. Yeah, they definitely say we're gonna get that mother.
Yep.
And they find out that I believe it's a Jawa who's driving the car.
But I thought no one was driving.
No, Bear was driving.
No, stop it.
No, I believe it's a Jawa who's driving the car. They just couldn't see it.
Oh,
because
he's little. Oh.
But it's because that Jawa, it's their buddy Tommy in shrunken.
That's right.
Body
so this
form.
Is when they discover that all the Jawas are actually people who have died and they had their funerals at that funeral home.
Yeah.
And but it's their corpses kind of sawed down. So I'm assuming what happens is they take out maybe the middle section of them to make them short.
Oh, okay. I was just imagining they were like squeezed together.
Oh,
like
compressed.
You put them in Photoshop and Control T transformed, and then like
that actually makes more sense, cuz you see all of the barrels at the end where the corpses are kept.
Yeah.
And so there has to be some kind of process, you know, to make them smaller.
Hey, Chelsea, I have a question.
What?
Who's Myrtle?
Myrtle?
Because they go back to a house and a lady steps out.
Fuck. I remember we even mentioned, we were like, Myrtle.
And they're like, sorry, Myrtle. And then they just breeze past it. But there's...
My notes are...
Yeah, my notes
point,
are crazy.
They're... crazy.
Because they put this Jawa body in the ice cream truck, and then they go and talk about how mom and dad are up at the same place. But before that conversation, they run into a lady and they're like, sorry, Myrtle. And she's
barely,
a neighbor
I
or some shit.
I don't remember that.
I don't know. Hey, email us at deadmeatpod. Tell us who the fuck Myrtle
is. It's a fucking mystery.
Yeah.
Also, I wrote that the ice cream man plays his ice cream truck music at night.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is really weird.
Yeah, you can turn that off.
Yeah.
You don't need to be driving around with a dead body in your trunk playing that.
Yeah.
All throughout this movie, I wrote it down now, but all throughout the movie, the editing is kind of surreal, kind of has a film school thing, but it'll be like people will start talking and then it'll like cut away while their conversation is still going on to shots of them doing other shit.
Yeah,
and it happens a lot earlier on. It happens here too.
Yeah, they mess with the timeline a lot, which I thought was kind of cool.
It's a fun, surreal aspect to it, and something that like stuck out to me as a younger viewer of being like, "This is weird.
Yeah.
I can't really tell what's real."
Especially
in
the beginning, before you get your bearings straight, mm-hmm. you're still kind of trying to figure out what happened in what order, and it's really disorienting.
Yeah, and then we even get one of those like moving pictures. When he's looking at a picture of the tall man,
yeah,
and the tall man's moving, it would be done much more effectively in the 1990 miniseries of It. But...
and the 2017 film, The Bye-Bye Man.
Bye-Bye Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, here...
the best film of 2017.
Oh, come on. So Jody leaves Michael with these two girls, Sally and Susie. I guess they're friends. Whatever. But he leaves them there to go take care of shit. Then Mike has the girls like drive him home, I guess, and they come across the ice cream truck.
Oh, and it's flipped over.
It's flipped over on its side. It's all messed up, and it looks like Reggie's dead. And then the Jawas attack the car, and like Mike gets out of the car, but then the car just drives off with these girls screaming, mm-hmm. and the Jawas in there, and Mike is just like, well, they're all dead, whatever. And then Jody locks Michael in his room.
God, I forgot about this part.
It's a great,
it's so
great
good
scene.
This was a good music cue in this scene.
Yeah.
So he gets locked in Jody's room, or no, Michael.
I think it's his own room. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So Jody locks Michael in his room, and Michael just MacGyvers his way out
with a shotgun shell.
It's a shotgun shell, and what he does is he
takes a thumbtack.
Yeah. So he basically pierces the bottom of the shotgun shell, and then hits it, like he tapes it to a hammer,
yeah,
right?
He tapes it to,
a hammer, and then he,
and it's this like long, you see him like
do this,
sit down in frustration,
look for the roll of tape,
yeah,
look
like
for
see
the
idea forms in his head and then puts it all together. It's more of like,
and it's all silent, it's just,
it's great. Yeah.
And so he puts this thing together, which is so fucking dangerous, by the way. Yeah. I don't think that's a good idea at all. The idea of like duct taping a shotgun shell to the front of a hammer and then hitting a door or a wall is the dumbest shit. But for him, it works. He hits the door and he just blasts a hole through his door. And right when he does it, the music starts up again, the synth, and it's so good.
It's so
I was
great.
So pumped in that moment.
It was so good. And it's another scene where it's like, it's putting a lot on that kid actor.
Yeah, he's good.
And he does it, and it's great.
Yep.
Yeah. But it kind of sucks because the tall man was waiting for him, and he snatches him up. Tall man snatches up Mike and puts him in a hearse. But then Mike shoots out the window and the tire. And then the hearse slams into this pole and just blows up instantly.
Oh my God.
It's like one of those classic car crash explosions.
It blows up so good. And I was wondering how much money they spent on just that.
Spent on the C4 that they had to load up in that fucking car.
And the permits.
Yeah.
Filming in California.
Because it nudges this pole and incinerates into a mushroom cloud.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. I forgot this all even happened. I feel like they go back and forth from their house to the mausoleum 10 different times. And
yeah,
it all feels the same.
Well, now we're finally at the mausoleum for good.
Okay.
And
this is what I was thinking of earlier.
This is like the last act, I think.
Okay.
And Jody, because he's checking his parents' coffins.
Yeah, Jody, because now they figure, oh God, all these dead bodies are these dwarves. I hope our parents aren't.
Yeah, which, like, your parents are dead either way. Whatever, man.
Sure. he goes to check for their parents.
Yeah, but Jody doesn't look. He, like, opens the coffin but doesn't look.
And refuses to look. What
whatever,
a fucking baby.
Yeah, what a baby. Mike gets there and fucking looks.
He looks, and there's
fucking
nothing
looks
in there.
It's empty, man.
It's empty.
Hell yeah. Also, this is when we get the first-person view of the ball. The sphere,
oh, yeah.
And it's just the super high contrast red view. It's like Predator view sailing through the air.
Is there a name for the
spheres?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
I just always assume.
But before it gets Michael, Jody just runs in and fucking shoots it with a bullseye.
Yeah,
and then Reggie pops up, and he's
oh
okay.
Yeah, Reggie's still alive,
and he's like, the girls are okay too. Whatever.
That moment,
it's
seems
weird.
So weird. And I assumed he was the tall man.
Oh, yeah?
Because it's so fucking weird. He's totally fine after this accident that flipped his ice cream truck over.
Yeah, and he just shows up.
Oh, and the girls are fine, too. It all seems so weird, but apparently, no.
Well, you know, the whole thing, spoiler alert at the end, is we don't know when this dream started, but remember the whole thing?
Oh.
Look, his brother is actually dead, and Reggie's all right, you know?
Oh my God,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. I know.
Fuck.
This movie fucks with your head, dude. This movie really fucks with your head.
I forgot the extent to which it might have. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll okay.
But Reggie actually, yeah, he says
we'll blow up that car when we get there.
Reggie says, yeah, those girls are fine, and that he also saved some other girls and that they ran off and they're okay. It's all
cool.
Right.
Cool. Okay, Reggie.
And
cool.
then,
cool.
yeah.
Cool. Okay,
and then
Reggie.
I fought a dragon and
I fought,
and
yeah.
It was really cool.
I went and found the Declaration of Independence.
And then we get some cool shit because they go into that room that's
this
super
cool.
White, bright light. It's like a minimalist room with these stacks of barrels. It looks like it's out of Antechamber, that puzzle game we played
yeah.
a few years ago, because it's like these super bright
it's
walls.
It's kind of Kubrick, too.
Yeah.
When did 2001 yeah. come out?
Earlier than this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it. I think it's very cool. And they're like these two metal pillars.
They're tuning forks. They're like,
oh, yeah.
They're the end of a tuning fork. Earlier we see Reggie.
Yeah.
There's very pointedly a shot where he is messing with a tuning fork. So you instantly get that you get that these two metal pillars.
Yeah, they flash back to the shot. Too,
yeah.
Just to remind
they
you.
They spell it out. I was a little disappointed.
Also with those like drum canisters, they like look inside and they're like, more dwarves. But it's like
we know.
Show us something.
Yeah, show us what's going on in there.
Yeah, I mean it's another thing. Like no one's driving this. It's just the low budget.
Yeah.
You can't show us what their ideas are outsized for their budget, which
yeah.
is fine.
So so while Jody and Ice Cream Man are looking at the little
not the Ice Cream Man though.
Yeah, not the ice cream, just Ice Cream Man. They're looking at the barrels, and I keep wanting to say Denny.
Nope, Mike.
Michael sticks his head
yeah.
in between the two tuning fork things, and his head is on another planet.
Yeah.
His head basically pops out on Mars.
It's pretty much Mars. It's a red
it's
planet.
It's basically Mars. It's a red desert, and there's this endless line of dwarves.
Yeah,
going,
it's like a caravan of Jawas.
Yeah.
And they're like carrying shit. I don't know.
Yeah. And then Michael starts getting sucked in.
But Jody saves him, I think.
Yeah, they do. They pull him out.
They're like, oh, hey, they're, they figure it out at this point. Oh, he's taking these bodies. He's making them dwarves. They're taking them to the planet and they're slaves.
They're slaves.
They're
yeah.
the tall man's slaves.
Yeah.
And I love that after he explains that, another prime acting moment from Jody.
Oh,
he snaps his fingers and says, yeah. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he was so close to figuring it out this whole time.
Yeah.
And this was like, yes, confirmed. I knew it.
Yeah,
I knew
you just
it.
Forgot to carry the one. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I love the snap. Yeah.
Then there's a blackout because I think they just couldn't figure out how to do what they wanted to do. The screen goes black, and then
there's just
their voices
sounds.
Being like, what's going on?
Oh, no, and it's so obviously ADR.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
like, look out, I'm going this way, and I'm going that way. Whoa!
Yeah.
Kind of some sound effects, like they're moving around, but they definitely are just in a studio reading the lines that were in that part of the script. Why does that happen? I forget.
What?
Why does that happen?
Is it after
is it
Reggie
after...
touches both pillars?
It must
and
be.
Like...
Reggie puts one hand on each pillar, each tuning fork pillar, and I think that's when there's a blackout.
It messes shit up. And after the blackout, Jody's outside now, and the tall man lady is stalking him.
For reasons.
Yeah, he just wound up outside, so okay. But Reggie is still inside that same room.
Yeah, he's getting sucked in to the tuning fork.
So Jody's outside getting stalked by the tall man lady. Who I'm learning is named Lady in Lavender. That's her character name.
That's also a very David Lynch character name.
Yeah.
But pre-David Lynch, except for Eraserhead.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I wonder if...
they ever like hung out or
talked. Yeah, I wonder if David Lynch had seen this movie at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. I like it.
So Reggie touches both of the pillars, the tuning fork things, and it goes all crazy and starts sucking everything into the pillar. It's another cool shot of all these like barrels that are hitting him in the fucking dome.
Yeah.
And I don't know how he's crawling away because there's nothing to really grip, but he manages to get away. And
shuts the door behind him.
Yeah. And he goes outside and he finds the lady in Lavender's body, and then she stabs him in the stomach.
Yeah,
she stabs
Reggie.
Yep, and Reggie goes down. And then the whole fucking funeral home does a Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Straight up
zap
Rocky
away.
Horror. The house kind of lights up.
Yeah.
And oh, the house is a spaceship.
Yeah. Like, and this is 4 years after Rocky yeah. Horror. So
it might as well be the exact same shot.
Yeah. Just the house like bloop.
Yeah.
But the tall man's still around, dude. And so their big plan, the brother's big plan, is to push him down an open mine shaft.
I love that after all of this, they realize that the tall man is from another, as far as they know, another dimension, and he has slaves, and it's this whole supernatural thing that is so far beyond their comprehension, and their final plan is push him down a mine shaft.
Just push him in a fucking mine shaft. Whatever.
I mean, you know, what else? I guess what else are they going to do?
Yeah. So they do that. They do that. There's the boy.
It is like a Looney Tunes setup. They basically use Michael as bait.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
And he controls his fear. Call
that's
him back
right.
to the box.
Yep.
You know? Yeah, he leads him into the mine shaft. And then... He falls in, and then from like the top of a giant hill, Jody pushes in some rocks that just like cover.
Oh, that cover the...
Yeah.
Yeah, these comically sized rocks.
Yeah. They're entombing the tall man like he's Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Just with a giant boulder. And then and then Jody, standing at the top of the hill, gives his best O'Doyle rules.
He kind of fist bumps
fucking arms in the air.
Got him.
Got him. But then Michael wakes up.
Fuck. This was upsetting.
He's...
You don't realize it's... Does he straight up wake up or does it cut to... I forget if we ever see him actually wake up.
I think he just wakes up in his room with the fireplace.
Yeah. So he wakes up in bed.
Yeah. And yeah. Reggie's there.
Yeah.
Who we just saw stab. So what the fuck? And Reggie's like, yo, dude. You know Jody died in a car wreck.
Oh, my God. It is the weirdest thing. Yeah, they're in front of a fireplace together.
Yeah, it's like this really big fire. It's
Reggie
a roaring fire.
Is like, oh, Michael, yeah, you know Jody died in a motorcycle accident.
We were at the funeral, and we see the funeral.
And now you live with me, and I try to be a good substitute brother.
Yeah.
Anyway. So sorry. Yeah. That's pretty much it. That's when my brain shorted out, and I just didn't even want to try thinking about how much of the movie was a dream.
Yeah, because who knows how much of that shit was a dream. I do like that as soon as Mike leaves the room, Reggie can't help but pick up his guitar and start playing.
Next to the fire. But then Michael goes back to his room.
To pack for a road trip they're going to do.
Road trip.
Yeah. But the tall man's,
there, and the tall man nabs him and pulls him through a window.
Through the mirror.
Oh, it's the mirror. That's right.
He crashes through the mirror.
Grabs him, pulls him in.
Yep. Cool.
The end.
So that's Phantasm.
I don't understand. I'm sure there's theories online.
Well, there's four more movies, son.
But are they going to answer?
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is it's like Child's Play, and it's all continuous.
Like, it's all linear.
Yeah, I think the second one might be the road trip that was
planned.
My
God, really?
I think so, dude.
But how can it be? Because I thought Reggie isn't in the second
one. No, Reggie's in all of them. The character of Michael is in all of them, but in the second movie, he was recast because the studios wanted a more established actor. And I guess that was cleared up by the third one when A. Michael Baldwin returns.
Is it an actor that we would know in the second
probably
one?
Probably not. The studios probably just wanted someone like, you know, someone of that they wanted. Jamie Lagasse? James Lagasse?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. How do you feel about Phantasm?
I liked it. It's very weird. It's very 70s, mm-hmm. which I always like. For some
70s.
Reason, things from the 70s really appeal to me. I can't explain what it is. Maybe some of it left me frustrated because I wanted more. I think the stuff I like best is anything in the mausoleum where it just gets really weird and
it's
stylized.
A very cool setting, yeah.
But you know, it's low budget. I understand that the whole movie isn't going to be that.
I think it's pretty held back by its budget, but I think it does what it can with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's obviously something that was made with love.
Yeah, and it's ambitious.
It is ambitious for Don Coscarelli.
Yep.
Who made this. And oh my God, Chelsea, he was 25 when he made this movie.
Really?
Holy shit.
Oh man.
That's awesome. That's so cool that this 25-year-old Libyan American, born in Libya, raised in Southern California, just fucking made this movie.
Yeah.
As I'm reading this
right now.
Born
in Libya?
He was born in Libya.
Huh.
That's cool. He also did Bubba Ho Temp, which I've never seen.
Oh shit. Okay.
He wrote and directed that, so I'll need to see that, because that's Bruce Campbell as Elvis Presley.
That's another cult movie.
Yeah, and I've never seen it.
Yeah.
So that's on the list of movies to see for sure. So cool, Don Coscarelli. I've got mad respect for you.
Yeah. Oh, the Beastmaster. Wait, what? He's got John Dies at the end in his credits.
Yeah, what'd he do on it?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Oh, he
wrote, John Dies at the End.
Oh, wow.
What?
You know what? That movie's trippy, too.
That movie is really trippy.
Yeah.
Cool. But that's also based on a book.
Yeah.
So it's not entirely his. But that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. I loved revisiting it. Can't wait to watch the sequels whenever we get around to them. Especially if they look as good as that and sound as good as that. That Blu-ray. Look it up, man.
I'm very interested to see how they change visually, because this one is the end of the 70s, mm-hmm. and I don't know.
The next one's 88.
Is it really?
Big gap.
Oh, wow. Okay, I just assumed they would span the 80s, but
no,
wow.
We got Phantasm 2 in 88, 3 is 94.
What the? Really?
4 is 98, and then 5, which I've never seen, was 2016.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
He
didn't direct that last one. But he co-wrote and produced it.
I'm very interested to see those.
I would love to see them. Definite eventual kill count, these movies, even though it's pretty low. I don't care. I'll cover them somehow on the channel, but
yeah.
I love them. And I'm just really happy that we got to rewatch it. And I recommend everyone check it out. If you're into horror.
Yeah, I feel like
it's something totally different.
Even if you're into cult movies.
Mm-hmm. It's slow.
It is. It's slow.
It's got some long shots where there's nothing going on except for some music. I think if you're into music, it'll help.
Yeah. Because
there's some like cool prog rock going on in here.
I could see some parts of it being a slog for people.
Yeah. But,
which, honestly, that's often the case with movies that are considered cult favorites.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But it's the stuff that sticks out that makes it worth seeing.
Yeah.
You know, the sphere to the head, the hammer with the shotgun shell.
Yeah.
The tall man in the mirror. It's just great shit. You know,
the tall man in the ice cream truck fog.
Yeah, that shot's fucking great.
It is.
So yeah, make sure you subscribe to Dead Meat on YouTube if you haven't already. Make sure you rate and review us on whatever podcasting app you're listening to us through. iTunes is, I guess, the most helpful one. Apple. Follow Dead Meat James on Twitter and Instagram.
You can find me at Carebeck. It's CREBECC. On Twitter and Instagram.
Yep. And if that's not enough for you, you can find my personal Twitter and Instagram at James A. Janisse, my name, all together. And that's it. That was Phantasm. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
This has been the Dead Meat Podcast.
I'm just a-sitting here at midnight. And I've been sitting here till noon. See, my lady left me lonely. Yes, she did. Baby left me blue. Yeah.